If you're a visitor here with us this morning, welcome. We're so glad you chose to join us this morning. And last week, we started our new series called Life on Mission. God's people finding God's heart for the world. Why doesn't, and this is the question I kind of posed last week, is why doesn't God take you to heaven the moment you become a believer? Why doesn't God do that? Why doesn't God take us to heaven the moment you become a believer? That's a really good question, right? I mean, heaven is the goal, right? That's our goal. That's where we want to be. That's where we want to end up with, or where we want to end. So why not take us there the moment we accept Jesus into our lives? We must have been left here on this earth for a purpose, right? There must be a purpose on why I'm here. Rick Warren actually said, there are only two things you cannot do in heaven that you can do here on earth. Only two. You can sing in heaven, you can pray in heaven, you can fellowship in heaven, serve God in heaven, rest in heaven, play sports, I'm hoping, in heaven, watch the Ohio State Buckeye football, since God's an OSU fan, almost everything. You can do almost everything, everything in heaven. There's only two things you can't do in heaven, two of them. And one of them is sin, and the other is tell people the good news about God's love. That's it. You can't sin in heaven, and you can't tell people about the salvation Jesus offers them because everyone in heaven is already a Christian, right? So here's the big question. Which of those two reasons do you think you're still alive for? Which of those two reasons do you think you're still here on this earth? I mean, this is really the question you need to answer. Do you think you're still on this earth so you can sin? Or so you can tell others the message of God's love? Acts chapter 1, verse 8, which is kind of our theme verse for this series, and it's Jesus talking, and he says this, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my what?
Witnesses.
In Jerusalem, and all of Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Jesus didn't say, you will be my prophets, right? He didn't say that. Jesus didn't say, you will be my judge, my jury, my executioner, which sometimes we as Christians think is our job, right? No. Jesus didn't say any of those. He didn't give us any of those jobs. Jesus said, we are to be what? His witnesses. Witnesses. One who has personal knowledge of something. Something serving as evidence or proof, a public affirmation by word or example. We are to be his witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And here's the thing, here's the key. We are saved from something for something. We are saved from something for something. We have a purpose. You have a purpose. Now here's the deal. When Jesus said these words, when he said, you are to be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth, guess where they were? When Jesus said these words, they were in Jerusalem. That's where they were. They were actually in Jerusalem. Jesus was essentially saying, I want you to tell others the good news of salvation that I offer, and it starts with your neighbors. That's exactly what he was saying. It starts with your neighbor. And the sad thing is, we have a tendency to go to Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth and forget about our neighbors right next door. Forget about the people in our neighborhood. Forget about our own communities. Why? Well, we think mission only happens in third world countries, right? Mission happens wherever there are lost people. Mission happens wherever there are lost people. And Jesus said that mission starts right out your front door, your Jerusalem. The disciples got it. They were on mission. And we read in the book of Acts that people were being saved. People were meeting Jesus. And at one point in Acts, it says that 3,000 people accepted Jesus in one day. One day. 3,000 people. The disciples literally took the message of salvation across the world. They were persecuted, beaten, killed because of the message they were spreading. But that didn't stop them from their mission. That didn't knock them off their mission. they understood that in order to be on mission, that their compassion had to be greater than their what? Comfort. That's what we talked about last week. Our compassion for people must be greater than our own comfort for ourselves. Our compassion must be greater than our comfort. Here's the sad thing. At some point, the church as a whole got off mission. At some point, churches began to exclude themselves from the world, exclude themselves from exactly the people we have been called to reach. At some point, we circled up and only paid attention to those within the circle, and all the while telling those outside the circle that they needed to clean up their act before we would ever let them be part of the church. We created holy huddles and totally missed out on the mission we were created to do. The next couple weeks, we're going to be talking through some different action steps. In order to live a life on mission, there has to be some action steps. Because in order for us to be on mission, there has to be action, right? There just has to be action. And this week, our action step is connect. And here's the thing. You can't tell people about Jesus if you aren't interacting with people. I mean, think about your own lives. Think about how you came to know Jesus. It wasn't through somebody's bumper sticker, right? In case of rapture, this car may be unmanned, right? You're like, what the heck's rapture mean anyways? I don't know. You know, it wasn't because of somebody's bumper sticker. It wasn't because you heard a song on the radio. It was because of an interaction with somebody else, right? This interaction with this connection with someone else. So that's our action step this week, connect. Religious people will build relationships with only those in their circle, only those who are like them. People on mission will build relationships with lost people, those who need saving. That's exactly what Jesus did, right? That's exactly what Jesus did. I mean, Jesus spent a lot of his time connecting with people outside of church groups. He spent a lot of time connecting with sinners and tax collectors and people you often don't think about. And actually, the really religious people hated it. The really religious people hated it. In Luke chapter 15, it talks about how there were tax collectors and sinners gathering around Jesus. They wanted to hear him speak. But the Pharisees, the really religious people, hated it and said, "This man welcomes sinners and even eats with them. How dare he?" They didn't say, "How dare he." I mean, that's kind of what their tone was, so you might as well add it in. "But this man welcomes sinners and even eats with them." Jesus often went outside the realm of what others thought you are supposed to do. And in Luke chapter 19, that's where we'll be this morning. If you want to flip your Bibles into Luke chapter 19. This is an example of exactly that story. Exactly that. Jesus going outside this realm of what others thought you were supposed to do. Now this story, this is a story that y'all might be familiar with. You probably heard this story as a little kid, and even sang this little song. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he, right? And now that song's going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thank you very much. You're welcome, right? So in Luke chapter 19, let's read the real story of Zacchaeus, and it starts like this. Chapter 19, verse 1, starting verse 1, says, "Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. There was a man there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector, and he was wealthy." A chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. Let's pause there for a second, because the backstory here is very interesting. And it's one that we're never taught as a child. Because here's the thing, being a tax collector wasn't something you went to college for. It wasn't something you spent time studying for in school and then you became a tax collector. What it actually meant was that you were a Jewish person who sold out to Rome. Yeah, Rome. The ones who were oppressing your own people. You sold out to them and you became a tax collector. Which meant that Rome decided how much money Rome wanted, and you had the opportunity then to charge whatever else you wanted to charge on top of that, and the people had to pay it. Because if they didn't, well, bad things would happen, even to the point of death. So Zacchaeus was like a mobster. He was like part of the mob, right? This is like the first indication of mob in history. He was crooked. He stole from people. Maybe he put hits out on people, I don't know. But we do know one thing. All the other Jews really, really hated him because they had to pay what he told them to. They had to. Even in scriptures, you will see how tax collectors are actually placed under sinners. I mean, there's literally stories that say, in the Bible you'll notice, they'll say lots of things like this. There are liars, there are cheaters, there are adulterers, there are Green Bay Packer fans, there are Notre Dame fans, then Michigan fans, then tax collectors right down here. So there's all those. There's like these levels, and the bottom one right under Michigan fan, like right under, there's a little bit of space, but right under, we're tax collectors. So you can read it in the Bible, I promise you it's there. If you were a Jew, you didn't hang out with that kind of riffraff. You didn't hang out with anyone who was associated with Rome. And if you are a religious person, then that's the last person that you ever thought deserved to be with the Father was a tax collector. I mean, literally, they were the scum of the scum, the bottom of the barrel. The interesting thing is Zacchaeus' name actually means righteous one. That's what his name actually means, righteous one, right with God. But he wasn't living that out in any regards. No one was excited to see a tax collector, and that's what makes this story so incredible. If we go on reading verses 3, starting back in verse 3, it said, he wanted to see who Jesus was. So Zacchaeus, he was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. Catch this. So he ran ahead, and he climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. So not only was Zacchaeus a tax collector, but he was a little person. He was a short guy. I envision the biggest case of Napoleon complex with this guy, right? But what's awesome about Zacchaeus is that he wouldn't be stopped. You see, for a Jewish man to even be seen running in the streets was unheard of. You weren't supposed to do that because it was improper, but Zacchaeus just didn't care, it seems, right? Just didn't care. Improper or not, he had something greater in mind. Even though people knew who he was, what he stood for, and what he was going to do, he needed Jesus, it seems. He needed to see Jesus. Somehow he had heard about Jesus. Or wanted to see what the whole crowd was about. Maybe even to get some more money. I don't know. Maybe just wanted to get some more money out of them. But whatever it was, this guy literally climbed the tree to see Jesus. You see, the reason we need to connect with people who are far from God is because they know deep down that they are looking for something. They know deep down there is something there. I think that a person that's far from God realizes that they need him more than they think. There is this void in their life that they've been trying to fill with all sorts of garbage, all sorts of stuff, and none of that is bringing joy into their lives. None of that is filling that void. There must be something else. I think that's where Zacchaeus is at this point in our story. I think he knows he's a scumbag, right? He knows he's a scumbag. He's cheated other people out of their money. He's wealthy. But obviously, money isn't filling that void for him. There must be something else. I wonder if maybe in his private moments when he's alone at home, he said to himself, what on earth am I doing? Why am I doing this? This is not working for me anymore. So when Zacchaeus hears Jesus is coming his way, he couldn't be stopped. He literally shimmies up a tree in order to see Jesus. Jesus has a way of being a magnet to people, doesn't he? He has a way of attracting people, but it's up to us that we encourage that relationship and not hinder it. That we're not a scarecrow trying to scare off those who are far from God. You see, people who are far from God usually have a great view of Jesus. They have a great view of Jesus and a terrible view of the church. Most people might know us for what we are against as opposed to what we are for. Have you ever felt that before? Oh, you're a Christian. You're against this, right? They automatically begin to put up these walls in front of us that we have to tear down. But the only way we can break down these walls and break down these stereotypes is not through debate, but it's through love. It's through relationship. It's through connecting. Continue on in verse 5. It says, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down and at once and welcomed him gladly. In your house or in your life, have you ever noticed that there are things in your life that you're around so much that you don't even really notice them anymore? Your husband, you're just like, I don't even want to pay attention to that guy anymore. He's just crazy. You know, you're just around it so much that you don't even think about it anymore. In our house, we had this coffee table for the longest time. This coffee table. And it had a busted leg on it. Like, literally, you put a drink on it. I think it was a Hawaiian table because it'd be like one of these, you set something down on it. And my wife would never get rid of it. We kind of just, we wouldn't even really notice it until we had people over and they would set something down on it and like, whoa, like, yeah, it's a piece of junk. We really got to get rid of it. And we never did. And just leave it there. It would just kids would run on it and they, you know, about fall because they'd be running all over. And that's probably why they got the busted leg in the first place. But anyway, another story for another time. But if you're around people enough too, you'll stop noticing them as well. But Jesus doesn't seem to do that, does he? He is always aware of what's going on around him, even when the crowds were heavy. There's actually the story in the Bible where Jesus is walking down the street, and there's these crowds of people around him, and there's this one lady, and she just is like, maybe if I just touch Jesus, you know, I'll be healed or something will happen to me. And she reaches out through the crowd and just touches Jesus. And Jesus immediately stops and says, what happened? Who just did that? I just felt that. I literally, when somebody just touched me, I just felt some power go out of me. What happened? He notices people. He noticed the touch. He knew that one woman needed him to notice her. And so he stopped and noticed her. That's what Jesus does with Zacchaeus. As he's walking amongst the crowds and all the people around him, he doesn't miss the opportunity to look up. He doesn't ignore him like everyone else does. Man, what would happen if we would just notice things, right? If we would just look up every once in a while. Man, what would God do? Jesus knew who he was. Jesus knew who Zacchaeus was. Jesus knows everything. He knew why he was there and why he had to climb the tree. But don't miss this. He makes the point to stop. Makes the point to acknowledge him. Makes the point to call him out. But not call him out like everyone else did, right? Because everyone else would have called him out as a liar, a cheat, a jerk. Jesus knew all that. But Jesus did something even more radical. He says, hey, Zacchaeus, come down. I want to go to your house and I want to get a bite to eat with you. Maybe watch some football. It has to be Buckeyes, but we'll get there eventually, right? Somebody say go blue and just shudder. And Jesus is like, I know I'm inviting myself over, but hey, I know you, and ain't nobody else coming to your house, so you got time, right? You got time. So he invites himself over. It's actually the only time in all the Gospels that Jesus invites himself over to somebody's house. Why? Because people far from God aren't looking for a Bible over the head, but a friend by their side. People far from God aren't looking for a Bible over the head. They're not looking for you to tell them, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that. They're just looking for a friend by their side. One of the easiest ways to start connecting with people is over a cup of coffee or over a Whopper at Burger King. Pastor Bill Hybels, in his book Contagious Christian, says, when you are talking about evangelism and talking to people about Christ, the thing you do first is you barbecue first. That's good theology. You barbecue first. I'm all about that. That's awesome. I love barbecue. Just have them over for a cookout. That's what Bill's saying. Pastor Bill Hybels is saying, just have them over for a cookout. This series, we're going to be using the analogy of a house a lot. While you connect with people a little in your front yard, when you invite them into the backyard, most of us grill in the backyard, I hope. I don't think you grill in the front yard. But you invite them to the backyard, that's connection. That relationship goes up a bit. They feel safe in the backyard. Because here's the thing, if they come over and you're weird, they can just hop the fence and go home. But if they're inside, they're kind of stuck with you being weird, and they just have to kind of deal with it for a while. But if then they're in the backyard, they can just leave. They can just hop right over the fence and take off. It's all about connecting. It often starts with food. Thank God, because I like food. So right now, clear your mind. Right now, I want you to think of your favorite barbecue recipe and not your favorite Bible verse. Think of your favorite barbecue recipe and not your favorite Bible verse. And I know that may sound crazy, but just be prepared that someone that you hadn't thought of or thought about might just come into your life. Invite them to connect. Invite them to the backyard for a barbecue. But understand this. When it happens, people aren't always going to be happy about it. When that happens, people aren't going to always be happy about it. Look in verse 7. It says, all the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner? He has gone to be a guest at the sinner? You see, in Jesus' day, a religious leader going to hang out with someone like Zacchaeus was unheard of. He just didn't do that. Religious people were all about being clean, eat clean food, hang around clean people, don't be dirty, and don't ever hang out with a sinner. It's this idea of I'm better than they are, and at least I'm not like this guy over here. He's a tax collector. But Jesus spent a lot of time, if not all his time, with people who were far away from God. People that needed a doctor, sinners. In fact, he told this parable in Luke chapter 14, if you flip over a couple pages in your Bible. Luke chapter 14, starting in verse 16, says, Jesus replied, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servants to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. Hop down to verse 21. It says, the servant came back and reported to his master, Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered that the servant go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there's still room. Then the master told his servants, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. The people who are going to miss out on are the ones who think they are healthy. The ones who think they have it all together. They've got all the excuses. They don't need to go. The ones that are going to receive what Jesus offers them are the lame, the poor, the crippled, the sinners. They're going to get in. Not only that, but we are supposed to go out and compel the people to come in. You get a seat at the table. I get a seat at the table. We all get a seat at the table. We just have to go out and tell them about God's table that is waiting for them. And when people connect with Jesus, amazing things happen. Look at verse back in 19, chapter 19, verses 18 through 10, or 18 10. 19, 8 through 10. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, Lord, look, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. To seek and save what was lost. This story drives me a little crazy. And here's why. Because I often wonder, what happened at dinner, right? I mean, what happened at dinner? That's what I want to know. What happened? Jesus is good. What did he say, right? Did he turn water into wine? What was he doing? I wonder if at one point he brings in Matthew into the discussion as a visual aid for Zacchaeus. You see, Matthew was one of the disciples, and he used to be a tax collector, just like Zacchaeus. In fact, when Jesus called him, he was at his crummy tax collector table collecting taxes, and Jesus said two words to him, follow me. That's all he said. He went up to the tax collector booth and said, follow me. And he got up and followed him and never looked back. He was lower than a sinner too. But Jesus invited him to his grace. I just wonder if he brings him into the room and says to Zacchaeus, hey, look, you know Matthew? You know Matthew. He was one of you. You know him. He was just like you, but look now. Look at what you could be. We don't know what happened during dinner, but whatever happened, man, changed Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus repented and wanted to make right all the wrongs he had committed. Man, if I've wronged somebody, if I've stolen from somebody, I'm going to give them back four times the amount. I mean, think of it as today, if a crooked politician, and we would say all of them are crooked, but anyway, but if a politician or whatever came out and said, hey, look, I've accepted Jesus, and I just want to tell you all the wrong I've done, and they begin to just spit out all the stuff they've ever done, and some of the stuff like, yeah, we know that, we've been saying it all along, you've been denying it. And then they start continuing to spit it out, and stuff we don't even know about comes out. This is what Zacchaeus is doing, literally just saying, hey, I've done all this wrong, but I want to make it right. I want to make it right. We don't know what happened at dinner, but whatever happened changed Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus repented and wanted to make right all the wrongs he had committed. Jesus transformed a low life into a high life. Jesus was the one who was able to impact his life, and his life was never the same again. You see, while religious people were muttering about what was going on the outside, Jesus was actually saving someone on the inside. Religious people talk all the time, but Jesus says action. Religious people stay clean, but Jesus gets dirty. Religious people live lives that are an arm's length away from people, but Jesus embraces people. Religious people look at others in trees, but Jesus calls people out of trees. Ironically, Zacchaeus thought that he was actually seeking Jesus, but in reality, Jesus was actually seeking him. If you're here this morning, you don't have a relationship with Jesus, just know that he sees you. He sees you. He is actually seeking you. Jesus is seeking you and me, but he is also seeking them, those outside that are still far off, his lost children, the ones who are still climbing trees, trying to get a glimpse of the one who could save them. And in order to do this, this is our business, actually. This is our business. That we're compelled to go and talk to them. We're in the business of connecting people with Jesus so he can transform them. And in order to do this, we must connect with people who you would normally connect with. In your bulletins this morning, if you have your bulletin this morning, open it up and there's this insert in it called Who's in Your Hood? Who's in your hood, right? And here's your goal. Your goal is to figure out who your neighbors are. That's your goal. Find out their names and then connect with them. Write down their names on this paper and begin to pray with them. Here's the thing. Let me say this. Write down their names, but don't put it on your refrigerator and then invite them over. And they're looking and they're like, oh, what's this? Why is my name on this paper? Oh, don't worry about it. You're just my project. Don't do that. That's weird. That's just weird. I'll say this a couple times during this message. Just don't be weird. Just be normal, okay? I mean, just be normal. Just normal people. But write down the names of those around you. And maybe you're thinking, well, I live in the country, so I don't have neighbors. You do? They just live farther away. So make it work. Make it happen. But write down your neighbors. Get to know them. If you're like, well, I don't even know who my neighbors are, that's your first step. Go and introduce yourself to them and find out who they are. And write them down. And then invite them over for a barbecue. Just don't be weird, right? Find out who's in your hood and connect with them. Invite them over for a barbecue or something. And then begin to pray for them. Figure out if they go to church. Figure if they have a relationship with Jesus. Find out about them. Get to know them. Build a relationship with them. Connect with them. That's what we're called to do. This is your Jerusalem. This is your Jerusalem. That's where we're called to go first. So figure that out. And yeah, it may be a bit uncomfortable. But here's the thing. Sometimes we need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Sometimes we need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. God never said the mission he's given us will be easy. Never once did he call us to live a life being comfortable. He just asked that we would be willing to connect with lost people and see all that God is about to do in you and through you. Will you pray with me? Father God, Father, once again, we thank you for a message that challenges us to go out, that we're not called to sit here in a building and interact with each other, Father, but we're called to belittle Christ, and you spend a lot of time hanging out with the really religious people would never hang out with, Father, so help us to do that. Help us to take a step out of our comfort zones. Maybe that we need to hang out in a bar or something and just share kind of our life. Not if we, it's not about us. So Father, help us to go out to where you've called us to go. Father, help us to go interact with our neighbors and those around us, Father. That's kind of our first step. Help us to get to know them. And then help us to not be preachy towards them, not try and get them to read the right kind of Bible or go to the right denomination of church or whatever, Father. Just help us to build a relationship with them, become their friend. They don't need a Bible over the head, they need a friend by their side. And the best way that we can lead them to a further relationship with you or into a relationship with you is just by how we live our lives. You are very contagious. And so when people see that what we have on our inside and what our life is all about, people are going to be like, I want that. What is that? What's going on in that guy's life? I want whatever he has. Father, help us to use our lives as a ministry tool to lead others towards you, Father. And if some of us here haven't been living the right life, we have a connection with you, but we haven't been living the right life, or maybe we've distanced ourselves from you, help us to pull us back in. Father, I'm so thankful for the story of Zacchaeus. You could easily have passed Zacchaeus by. He's up in a tree. Who cares? He's a tax collector up in a tree. I'm not going to bother. But you stopped, and you looked up, and you saw him, and you called him out. Father, help us to do that with people in our lives. Help us to slow down in our lives and see people where they're at and say, hey, I just want to hang out. I just want to get to know you a little bit. You want to go do dinner? You want to go have a cup of coffee? You want to come over for a barbecue or something? I just want to get to know you. I just want to get to know your hurts and where you're at in life. And maybe I have some of the same exact hurts, and we can help each other through, Father. Continue to empower us to go out